Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Hello, and welcome to the Houston Innovators Podcast. I'm Natalie Harms, editor of Innovation Map. This podcast is brought to you by the Pearland Economic Corporation and Texas Citizens Bank. Today, my guest for the show is Deanna Zhang, Director of Energy Technology for Tudor, Pickering, and Holt, a Houston-based financial advisor. Deanna supports both startups and corporations within the energy industry, and will discuss on the show what trends she's seen in energy technology, from a rise in ESG to a growth in special purpose acquisition company IPOs. She'll also share how she sees these trends evolving in 2021. Deanna, thanks so much for joining me today.
Thanks, Natalie. Happy to be here.
Well, let's start with introducing you and what you do for TPH.
Yeah, so I'm a director in TPH's investment banking group, and I cover energy technology. Energy is pretty broad, technology is pretty broad, and we basically cover all of what that covers. Everything from the digital oil field to waste management and emissions types of technologies to alternative energy technologies. Really anything in the spectrum of energy, anything that can be really considered more technology enabled falls under our umbrella. And I cover it from the investment banking side right now, but in the past I've also covered it from the research side. So I've been in a role where I've had to just write things pretty regularly, reports, literature, and do interviews, much like what you do, Natalie, now, but in a more public market facing capacity in and around energy tech. And that was back in 2017, 2018. And back then there really wasn't a big or well-established contingent of public equities that one could cover as a research analyst. So I actually spent more of my time covering startups and really fell in love with the space back then and decided to work more fully in that capacity over in the investment banking side. And that switch happened back in end of 2018.
Yeah, so you really have a pulse on energy technology, which of course is super important to Houston as the energy capital of the world. It's also interesting that you work with both startups and corporations. And just so everyone knows who's listening, you are also one of Forbes 30 Under 30 for last year. So tell me a little bit about that, just because I think that's such an honor, of course. And so tell me a little bit about that and what it meant to receive that recognition.
Yeah, no, as you said, it's such an incredible list. There's so many people on that list that I admire and really want to get to know. So many founders and CEOs and other people in sort of a similar capacity as me in kind of a advisor or financial advisor capacity. I'm just really incredibly honored to be part of that list. I think I definitely think it's something that that you kind of have to be in a fortunate position to be part of. And I think that's kind of what happened to me is I was allowed the opportunity to kind of build this energy tech practice up and got a lot of exposure doing it. That's really what led to me being nominated for the list. But it's to be part of that community is just so incredibly humbling. And so I'm excited about it.
It's almost like a testament to the role you play in this traditional industry, it, kind of moving it into the new era almost, it seems.
Yeah. I mean, energy transition has been such an evolving concept, I think. I think if you look back, to what energy technology meant a couple years ago, it really was, you know, what was really two sides, the digital oil field, so everything around digitalization and industry 4.0, and then this other side, this other sphere, which was, you know, clean energy, green energy, and kind of alternative energy. And I think what you're seeing now is those two spheres of companies and people and advisors really merging and coming together to kind of think about the concept of energy in a much more broader sense. So a lot of our job is kind of thinking about how energy transition as a word, as a concept, as a movement is evolving over time. And a lot of that has to do with how traditional energy will look to energy transition and will be part of energy transition going forward.
And I'm so glad you brought that up, because one of the things I want to talk to you about is some of the observations you made about 2020 and within the industry. And of course, top of mind is this energy transition. So how did you observe the energy transition over the course of 2020? I assume a bit of a roller coaster, but I'll let you explain what your look back on 2020 for the energy transition was.
Yeah, I mean, 2020 was such a crazy year for so many reasons. And I think because it was such a disruptive year, I think as a result, everyone from kind of the commercial side and the business side to the consumer side have rethought how they were using energy and how they were thinking about energy. I think it's the first time that you kind of saw just like such a mass disruption of energy demand. And I think that kind of rolled through the entire ecosystem. And so, you know, 2020 was such a huge year for accelerating kind of the buy-in to energy transition as a concept. And part of that, you know, part of that was a consumer choice, like I was saying. But also part of that is just the where capital flows goes. You know, a lot of capital providers kind of took a step back in 2020 and thought about where they actually wanted to allocate their capital and where it would be better spent. Just how many companies experienced such challenges during the year. And so just overall, I think, you know, I think energy transition just saw a huge uptick, in 2020. And I think, you know, there's a lot of little implications for that, just in, you know, what pilots are getting commercialized, what companies are getting the funding, you know, where the funding is coming from. So the SPAC space obviously saw a huge boost in 2020 and it's become a big part of kind of the capital raising picture. And I think just in terms of, the amount of players and who's in energy transition, that's definitely expanded, as a result of 2020. Mm-hmm. So all around, just like hugely disruptive, but hugely beneficial, I think, for energy transition.
I like what you highlighted about how every aspect of the industry had to be a little more intentional and more thoughtful, it seems. And one of that, I think, is one other trend we're seeing come out of that is the ESG market, whether it's a big corporation being more mindful about, you know, their sustainability and their ESG transparency, or even startups that are able to provide that as a part of their business. So, you know, how did you see that kind of culminate over the course of 2020? And is that something to keep an eye on in 2021?
Yeah, I mean, ESG has been kind of growing as a concept, as something, beyond a concept, as something that that is important for investors and for all sorts of capital allocation for a while now. You know, I think if you look at kind of the growth of the last, you know, say half a decade, it's been exponential. And it accelerated in 2020, because you saw this kind of focus in on energy, on climate change, on energy transition. But ESG as a whole has always been kind of a growing movement. And I think that's partially just driven by kind of all the activism that's been going on in the space and consumer choice. But I think also just like, you know, investors need to figure out how they want to optimize their capital allocation as a whole. And so it's not just about economics anymore, although that's obviously just always going to be kind of the crux of what drives investing. But it's you know, what's the investor responsibility to society as a whole? And it's going beyond economics. It's going to, what is your social responsibility? You know, what's your environmental responsibility? And I think a lot of that expansion of responsibility is what is driving ESG. And so, you know, that's going to trickle down to corporations, well, to companies, as they think about what is their expanded responsibility. You know, how do they take care of not just their shareholders, but also society as a whole, how they impact society and their workers, their employees, and everybody, every kind of player they touch in the ecosystem. And then for the companies that have sort of ESG oriented technologies, or even technologies that can have an ESG angle. So what normally would be considered industrial technology, energy efficiency types of technologies that would be sold on the angle of lowering costs or helping improve productivity, how those technologies can then be kind of pivoted to being part of the cleaner and greener conversation. Mm-hmm. Those companies have definitely seen just more uptake in 2020 and going forward to 2021 and beyond 2021. I think you'll just see more of that because there just needs to be it's such a global and I think big picture trend that companies and shareholders and investors and all of these like big entities be thinking about more how they can impact society. And I think just going forward, but it's not going to slow down. It's only going to accelerate.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think just to your point of investors have this social responsibility and they're realizing they're factoring that into their decisions. It's becoming harder to kind of distinguish between the economic side of things and the social impact side of things, because now it's more economic, especially in a consumer facing business, to factor in ESG. So it's not separate anymore, right? Like it's the same thing.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and a lot of it, you know, what we talk about right now in terms of being ESG oriented is just kind of around ESG reporting. So not necessarily that you are on an objective basis more ESG than another company. It's right now, you know, who's being more transparent in terms of where their ESG, what their ESG scores are, where in the value chain, what might there be potential ESG implications. And so it's right now it's definitely still developing, you know, how as a company you can be quote unquote more ESG. Because right now just everybody is just trying to get more data out there and become more transparent.
Which is completely impossible to distinguish between the ESG reporting and the role like technology and data plays. So it's I feel like every episode of my podcast this year so far has talked about ESG in part because it's just this intersection of business and technology, right?
Right, exactly. And how much value can technology bring to ESG? You know, a lot of it is really hard to quantify, right? Because when you reduce liability, there's always such a gray area in what that value is to a company. It's usually, you know, different values for different companies. So all of that combined with, I think, just the inherent subjectivity of ESG and the different standards around ESG just make for it's a really confusing space. And that's why we actually have a guy in our firm, Craig Webster, who is solely focused on ESG, because it's such a difficult space to figure out. And there are lots of moving pieces almost all of it is on a spectrum, right? Is gray and can be very subjective. So in terms of the role of technology in ESG, I think it'll take a lot of time to figure out exactly how you quantify that.
So I want to talk a little bit about the energy startups you work with and what you observed over 2020, the financial trends within that from raising capital to business growth. How would you define 2020 for energy tech startups?
Yeah, I mean, 2020 was very obviously a challenging year for most companies. I think, especially if you were facing the oil and gas market, I think, you know, you saw a lot of your customers' budgets shrinking or basically cut completely. And so that just wasn't very beneficial for your organic growth. So a lot of companies, saw 2020 numbers go down. I think the exception to those were any companies that that had a very strong energy transition angle. Mm-hmm. And those companies, I think, kind of were able to reposition themselves to sort of be part of the heavy interest in 2020 in energy transition, and that benefited them and was able to kind of counteract what was going on in the market in general. So I think overall it was challenging from a commercial standpoint, from a capital raising standpoint, also very challenging. I think a lot of the funds, put basically a complete freeze on their capital allocation to new companies and even in some cases to existing companies in their portfolio. And I think add to that, I mean, some of the funds that had been in the middle of fundraise really saw those numbers go down as, you know, their LPs and kind of the big money managers that they would normally be raising money from also had a capital freeze. So you just saw an overall private capital system shut down in the middle of 2020. It sort of restarted in August and September. And so you saw some wallets opening back up. But there was just kind of a very much a lot of caution around where they would be putting their capital into. And so for most investors, they really high graded the opportunities they were looking at, you know, to kind of very narrow areas of interest and scope. And so just overall for energy tech companies that were raising capital or needing capital in 2020, that they have to rely heavily on the investors that were already on their cap table, and kind of just hope that runway could last them until 2021 or the next time that the private capital markets will open back up.
As you explained that, I was wondering, was there, I guess, geographically, did you observe different activity and different reactions comparing different regions, or was, you know, the pandemic kind of an equalizer for all the different, you know, innovation hubs in the country, or what did you see?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was a really good equalizer in a sense, in that I think, you know, certain regions were harder to raise capital in than others. I mean, one can kind of point to, you know, let's say like Minnesota versus California. But I think, you know, having less capital available in the market, I think had a lot of companies looking much more outward and looking to other parts of the country for that capital. Mm-hmm. So in a way, it was an equalizer. I would say, like, whether or not the pandemic affected one region or another more, probably had less of an effect. I do think there were some differences, like, you know, not being able to travel more in some regions probably had an effect on you know, just running a process or being able to get face-to-face with investors in certain areas. But I think in a lot of ways, like the pandemic, everybody working remotely and you know, kind of accepting that as a norm, opened up a lot of opportunities for companies to look to just geographically constrained sources of capital.
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought up the effect of remote work, because that's something I want to ask you about. The industry across the board having to quickly switch to, you know, a remote workforce, and then also all the challenges of reintroducing in-person working, but also all of the setbacks of that not reintroducing it right away. Just, it was, I'm sure, a roller coaster. So what did you see the effect being on the industry? I would assume forced tech adoption, but also, you know, other types of slowdown.
Yeah, I think COVID had the added effect of not only constraining capital and constraining budgets, but also directing where that capital was being spent, you know, where it was quote unquote safe to be spent. And I think a lot of that was in and around the remote workspace. If you look at, you know, where IT budgets, where a lot of the internal company budgets were being directed, it is a lot, you know, very heavily weighted in 2020 and now even in 2021 towards you know, video conferencing software, you know, remote collaboration software, just these packages that you know are obviously very COVID friendly. And I think you kind of saw that trickle down to the energy tech space, and that any business that had an angle where it was reducing people on the field or reducing people on site, or allowing for more social distancing in general, definitely saw that just a boost in commercial sales, from customers looking into it just solely for that purpose. So I think remote work did have an effect on energy tech in a positive way, in that in those verticals, you know, around automation or remote monitoring, those types of technologies had an additional angle now that was boosted by kind of the general COVID experience.
Support for this podcast comes from Pearland's Lower Kirby District, located at 288 and Beltway 8, a 1,200-acre mixed-use district offering a premier business location with access to Pearland's diverse educated workforce. Learn more about the smart pro-business address at lowerkirby.com. Support also comes from Texas Citizens Bank. Through good and tough times, you need a bank that will stand by you. Texas Citizens Bank gives Houston small and medium-sized businesses the resources they need to thrive. As one customer says, a huge thank you to our friends at Texas Citizens Bank. Great customer service and down-to-earth good people. Call 713-948-5700 to learn more today.
So looking at 2020, which we've discussed all of the trends so far, how are you translating these trends into 2021 and like where are we going from here across the board? Because it's a new year, but of course it's also a new administration and just a real transitional time for the industry.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right on to say that it's transitional. I think there's still a lot of uncertainty around when business will get back to normal. And I think there's still just a lot of general feeling that this is a weird time and still a weird time, even though we're in a new year. And so I think when we're looking forward to 2021, you know, a lot of the same trends that we saw in 2020 will continue to 2021. You know, I think the acceleration in energy transition will continue. I think we're still going to see more SPACs, you know, even though it feels like we've almost gone through every single SPAC at this point. And I think we're still going to see some hesitation from investors in allocating capital in the private markets, because I think, you know, there's still not a consensus around what things will happen when, if I can say that really, really at a high level. Even investors that you know have a very specific mandate or specific thesis, I think, you know, they in part want to time their investments correctly. And you know, if you're sort of riding the energy transition wave, I think there's a portion of investors that are looking to kind of the stock market or to the public market as a potential exit opportunity near term. But you know, there's not wide consensus around, you know, when, if that will continue, and you know, if this is a bubble and if it'll burst, and you know, so I think there's just there's only, I think, select parts of the energy universe where I think there generally can be consensus. I think you're seeing premium valuations for those spaces as a result, and I think that's, you know, the EV market has definitely seen a ton of capital pouring in the last couple months, and a lot of EV companies have SPAC, in part because I think, like, if you're looking longer term, you know, the only way for EV adoption the only direction it can go is up. And you have so many companies bought into that ecosystem and into that thesis, that it's hard not to have consensus that EVs will be a much bigger thing in the next couple of years. So I think that's sort of a safer bet. But you know, when it comes to some of the other verticals, you know, where the oil field will go over the next couple of years, you know, and how those technologies will play in the oil field, I think that it's just a little bit harder to have, I think, assurance that you're in sort of a crowd of like-minded people around that, because just not, there's just so much uncertainty around that. And then, like, you know, something like hydrogen, you know, we've seen some of those multiples blow out too. But at the same time, not as much deal activity as in the EV space, because in part there's just sort of disagreements between all of the players in how much hydrogen will play in the ecosystem near term and longer term. And so, you know, looking forward to 2021, I think you'll see a lot of people getting smarter on energy transition, maybe more of an evolution of these conversations and in, you know, what the general quote unquote consensus will be around some of these spaces. But I think it'll be hard for everybody to know exactly what's going to be, what will happen, frankly, this year, with kind of the overlay of COVID still hanging over us. Mm-hmm. So So I think it's tough to say. In other words, in short, Natalie, it's really tough to say what's going to happen in 2021. We can only point to kind of what happened in 2020 and say like certain things are more likely to move forward. And I think, you know, I think you can safely say that energy transition and this movement towards ESG will continue to grow. There's no stopping that. But in terms of kind of the nuances of which spaces will take will take hold more than others, or you know where traditional energy will land at the end of the year, or which companies will get ahead, or which companies will continue to suffer. I think all of that, you know, there's a lot of uncertainty around all of that.
It's funny. I feel like we all personified 2021 as this drastically different year, the solution to our problems is a new year. And what we're realizing is the new, the coming out of COVID is going to take a little bit longer than just a calendar flip into a new year. But I want to ask you about the SPAC activity that you've been referencing, because I think this is not something, I mean, I regularly think about. So at least for our listeners' purposes, can you explain a little bit about what you mean when you see this trend happening within this?
Yeah, so SPACs, special purpose acquisition companies, have been around for a pretty long time. I think the first one was, I want to say in the 90s. It's been a vehicle that's been used in across the industry, including in energy. We saw a bunch of EMP SPACs, you know, maybe 4 or 5 years ago. But it's kind of emerged in recent times as a way for companies in the energy transition space in particular, but maybe more generally for companies that are a little bit too early stage, or you know, just a little bit out of the sweet spot for an IPO to be able to go public through a different vehicle. So you think about some of the companies that are SPAC. You know, it's a lot of these really heavily capitalized companies that don't really have comparable peers in the public markets right now. So, you know, the public markets itching for these energy transition companies really have wanted a public entity like this. There's like a lot of these types of companies that maybe aren't generating revenue right now or generating EBITDA that normally wouldn't be public ready that have found themselves a perfect counterparty in the SPAC market. So when we talk about, you know, SPACs becoming quote unquote more of a thing, it's a lot of just more sponsors looking towards SPACs as a way for them to be able to find interesting parties and raise money and market them in the public market. So a lot more SPAC IPOs as a result of that, in kind of these sponsors and private equity companies taking advantage of the public market. And then also, you know, a lot more interest from the SPACs themselves in energy transition oriented de-SPAC targets. So companies that they can merge with in the private space that you know would be well received in the public market, and that maybe don't quite fit the bill for an IPO just yet. So that's kind of the SPAC market in a nutshell.
It's interesting. One of the things I love talking to people who are really ingrained in the energy industry about is this idea that Houston gets to tout it's the energy capital of the world. And obviously the industry is extremely important to the city, but you know, when we think about the energy transition, we think about the next few years as this transitional period, is Houston going to be able to maintain this moniker? Like, are we going to be able to keep this as one of our defining factors and to be more focused on energy and less oil and gas business? So how do you see these next few years defining the city of Houston? And do you see the city being able to maintain this reputation, I guess?
Yeah, you know, I think we definitely can. And we have all the tools that we need to do it. I think, you know, Houston is, it's, first of all, I think because it's got such a concentration of traditional energy companies, that have the capital and that have the desire to participate in energy transition, I think that in itself will be one reason why Houston will continue to be the energy capital of the world, is because, you know, that you look at just the number of clean energy projects and new energy projects that have been deployed so far, and look at the players behind them. A lot of them are the traditional energy companies, the big, the integrated, the majors that are themselves trying to transition. And so I think you'll see Houston continue to play a big part in that, solely for that. But then also, like, if you look at just Texas as a whole, you know, we've got one of the largest wind power, the largest wind power footprint of all of the states. And we've got a really fast growing solar energy ecosystem. And we've got a lot of companies that don't fall in those buckets that are, you know, kind of levered to new energy. There's a company, Medox, that is commercializing high temperature superconducting wire, and they're stationed in Houston. And Houston Mechatronics, which is a company that I think you've had on before, Natalie, is maintaining offshore wind farms with their robots. So I think you'll see a lot of these startups, you know, in part because Houston is currently the energy capital of the world, continue to station themselves in Houston and take advantage of all the local support from the energy companies and from the investors that are energy oriented. So I think there's a lot of hope for Houston. I can't say that, you know, that I think energy won't become more decentralized in terms of just having multiple hubs around the world, because I think that's inevitably going to happen as energy becomes just more fragmented, and as there are more companies in the energy space and more energy choice by consumers. But I think Houston, you know, it'll continue to play a really integral part in the energy ecosystem. And as long as we continue to focus our efforts to be more forward thinking and forward leaning in the energy space, I think we have all the tools that we need to kind of continue this momentum and continue to build our position in the energy sector.
I think it's interesting that, you know, the infrastructure is here, so we have that going for us. But it's definitely going to have to be more of a intentional approach if you know, the same level of activity needs to be maintained. So definitely something to keep an eye out on. And yeah, the startups promising potential in the industry are extremely kind of encouraging. And I'm glad you brought up those two in this case. And I think, yeah, people forget so much about the wind energy and the solar movement. So there's a lot going on for sure.
Yeah, there's a ton going on. And I think it's something that doesn't get publicized enough, which is why, you know, I think Innovation Map and what you guys are doing is so important, because a lot of the word needs to get out that Houston is not just, you know, an old oil and gas town that only wants alternative energy to die. You know, I think that's sort of the perception, but it's not like that at all. I think, you know, even the most traditional of energy companies are looking towards the future and thinking about how to make themselves more efficient and cleaner, and all of that points positively towards our quest for energy transition. So I think people need to realize that. I think it's a perception issue, and one that'll be turned by time and by, I think, just more interaction, more conversations with people outside of our universe.
Absolutely. Well, we're doing it. We're changing it one podcast at a time, one article at a time. So this is great. And I think you've given us all a lot to think about as we continue into 2021 and take a lot of lessons learned from 2020. A lot to think about and a lot happening here in Houston. So thank you so much for coming on the show to talk us through all of that.
Absolutely. Yeah, I appreciate it, Natalie, and always looking forward to this. I think it's so important, and I appreciate the time.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of the Houston Innovators Podcast. Don't forget to hit subscribe so you don't miss next week's edition, and check out innovationmap.com for the latest Houston startup and innovation news.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.